You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, everybody, to your favorite day of the week. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Adam Maris right now, or Adam Maris. I'm sorry, Adam. I messed that up again. But for today's show, and I'm just going to really quickly intro this one, talk about what we're going to talk about here in a bit, and then throw directly into the conversation that we had, or that I had with Sam Amick of The Athletic. We basically, right before we went live, right before we started recording, the Carmelo Anthony, LeBron James, Lakers story dropped. That was on top of everything else that I'm sure Sam has going on a daily basis as he covers the NBA in the way that he does. But we talked about the Carmelo thing. We looked back on the Jimmy Butler trade and the prism through which we analyzed some of those deals. We also talked a little bit about the Bradley Beal and Otto Porter and John Wall situation in Washington. We talked about the Warriors all of a sudden looking kind of sort of mortal, and how that impacts the way that the rest of the league is going to handle the upcoming trade deadlines and once December 15th rolls around and some of these contracts can finally be moved, what that might do to the way that the league might look over the next month or few. So a really fun conversation between Sam and me. This is Adam is out on traveling. I believe he's in Austin, Texas. So if you're in Austin, bug him a little bit. And then we're going to throw it to the weekend. And then a week from now, Adam and I will be back at it again with the typical show that he and I put together every week. So enjoy this conversation. This was a lot of fun. Thank you very much to Sam. And we'll talk to you guys next week. And I'm joined now by Sam Amick of The Athletic. He was formerly of USA Today, and generally speaking, if you've had a story broken across your timeline, Sam was involved to a certain extent. The NBA is heading into December right now, and this is where, I mean, this year's a little crazy in and of itself, but this is where the rumors really start swirling. And just as to point to that fact, right before we started recording this podcast, the Melo to Lakers speculation started popping back up. So Sam, one, thank you very much for joining, and two, you're talking to a Lakers fan, so please be delicate. Please tell me.
I don't know, Anthony. I will handicap this and say I don't see it. And if it does happen, not to sound the alarms for folks like yourself who bleed purple and gold, but I would be a little curious/worried about the internal dynamic. I think if this happens, it's because LeBron wanted it to happen. And that kind of begs the question of, do they have the right kind of synergy among their group? When I'm talking Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka, Luke Walton, all the above, because, when our Joe Varden broke the story about LeBron being interested in bringing Melo, my early feedback from the Lakers side, and more specifically, I'll kind of describe it as like the coaching side, is that there's certainly not any interest in having Melo be part of the group. Now, that changes when LeBron looks you in the eye and says, I'd really appreciate it if, because he's LeBron James. You know what I mean? That's what comes with having LeBron on your team. But, I've heard about some Lakers interest in Bradley Beal as a dream candidate to, they'd be willing to take on bad money to bring Bradley to town, and that's the kind of infusion of talent I think that would get Lakers fans pretty fired up. And they also, I believe, and you probably know this better than I do, that they've got one roster spot remaining and that they want to keep that open for trade purposes. I don't know. On the flip side, here's how I'll be the devil's advocate to my own argument. I have this visual of like Melo sitting wherever he's sitting at the moment and saying, wait a minute here. I know that maybe Father Time is kicking my butt right now, but if I can't get on the Misfit Island roster with Lance Stevenson and Michael Beasley and Rajon Rondo and, JaVale McGee, then when could I get on an NBA roster? So interesting situation. And we should have seen this coming. I mean, the second that Melo was parting ways with Houston and his days there were done, you just connect the banana boat dots and figure out where the other possibilities are.
Yeah, I don't want to turn this into the Locked On Lakers podcast because that already exists. But I do think the point that you make about the dynamic between LeBron and Magic. From day one, we've been told, and LeBron and Magic and everybody involved has been selling it as a partnership, right? It's been, they're on something close to even footing. This isn't how things went in Cleveland, where he said jump, and they jumped, they asked how high. And so I completely agree that if this kind of thing does go through, and the Lakers do actually make a move for Carmelo Anthony, that brings into question, okay, how much is this actually a partnership, and what does this mean for other things moving forward? Because if LeBron is throwing his weight around for Carmelo Anthony, who would to a certain extent be like a 12th or 13th guy, basically, if even if the Lakers brought him on, well, then what else, where else is LeBron going to flex, and where else is he going to, I guess, for lack of a better term, force moves? So that's definitely interesting.
Yeah, well, and this is, it's funny, we keep dealing with these different storylines with like middle of the road teams that are doing things, you know, at a better than expected level. And this is a weird parallel to make, but, you know, I wrote a lot recently about the Kings and how, you know, they've been playing really well. Then they had this conflict with Dave Yeager and
weird.
The assistant. Yeah. And so, but my thing is just like, my goodness, people, like, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Like, when it's going well, just don't do weird, silly things.
Yeah.
To me, that's kind of what the Lakers thing is right now. I wish I had the numbers in front of me, but bottom line, you know, they start 2-5. And their defense has been tremendously improved.
Top three in the since last, they signed Chandler.
Right. So Melo's not helping on that front. You can't put him on the floor, you know, and Luke in particular is taking great strides to try to make this whole thing work. And so I just don't know what, you know, the upside is beyond, you know, this. I thought about tweeting this, except that I felt too mean to tweet it, where it was like, listen, I try to help people in our business as often as possible. I have friends who I want to have them be gainfully employed.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? If I didn't think that they could help the Athletics cause and write at a high enough level and report at a high enough level to warrant employment by this company, I can't, you know, sleep at night if I help them get a job that they shouldn't have. And, and the same applies in this case. I mean, LeBron is, it kind of feels like, and we'll see. I'm not saying, I mean, listen, Joe nailed this story and 100%. It's, I think, accurate that LeBron has strong interest in Melo joining him. I also feel like, doesn't it seem like maybe it's one of those stories where let the record show that I tried to get you on the team and then it didn't work out.
Absolutely.
And now we can still be friends.
Yeah, it was, it definitely felt, it covered all bases, really, right? Like, Joe Vardon, who broke the story, as you mentioned, for The Athletic, he made sure to mention that LeBron hasn't specifically asked or demanded anything here. This is just, hey, it would be nice, you know, and I think it has to be tough. I mean, you look at other guys from LeBron's draft class, he's still going strong because he's some kind of cyborg, and he's looking at other guys that were drafted around him, and he's watching their careers end, and to a certain extent here, if he can try to help Carmelo, and other agents try to do this all the time with their clients too, right? Where, not to call LeBron Carmelo's agent, where they say, well, there's interest from the Lakers, and therefore we know that that's going to garner headlines. So if there's interest out there somewhere, maybe some other team might be convinced to give this a go as well. So we'll see how that goes.
That's a good point right there. I mean, it's, you know, that's the that's the gray area of the example I used earlier when it comes to The Athletic. Like, does it, you know, might I get on the phone and say a few nice things about a friend that could lead him to getting an opportunity elsewhere that, you know, it wasn't where I could sleep at night? You know, yeah, maybe you do those types of things for your buddies.
Yep, absolutely. We're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, we are going to continue with other news and stuff that's going around the league. You did some writing about the Jimmy Butler trade from both sides of it, and I really enjoyed that. So that's a fascinating dynamic to watch that all take place. So we'll get to that here in a second. So the Jimmy Butler trade at the time, there was some concern if Miami was actually offering up a first round pick. Some who were out there, the internet GMs were wondering, hey, why wouldn't you just go for the first round pick? Or when Houston reportedly offered four of those first round picks, people were like, what's going on here, right? And to a certain extent, Tom Thibodeau was sitting there saying, well, there's no guarantee I'm going to remain employed long enough for those first round picks to actually help me personally. And he took more of the win now package. It's worked out pretty well for both teams from where I'm sitting, and you wrote about that. So from where you're sitting, how have you analyzed the Jimmy Butler to Philadelphia trade at now we are a couple weeks later?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those for me where I don't often get it right when it comes to handicapping the different deals that go down, you know, when they first go down. But when this trade happened, I did think that, you know, the skill set of Dario Saric and Robert Covington and what they were going to bring to the table as an aggregate to get, you know, collectively was getting overlooked in the hype of the idea that the Sixers had their star trio, mm-hmm. you know, with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid and Jimmy. So it feels like the rare win-win. And what I've been even more fascinated to see, probably on the Minnesota side, is that, you know, defensive performance in general, even with the incredible level of analytics in the game today, they continue to be, you know, a pretty significant amount of mystery around, you know, not only quantifying defensive impact. It's gotten better, but it's still hard to figure
Absolutely.
Out. And so to that end, it's like, how do you quantify the collective will and the spirit of a Timberwolves team that lost a guy in Jimmy Butler that is universally recognized as a tremendous defender, and but now is defending at an exceptional level in comparison to where they were before? And, you know, and I know Covington has a lot to do with that, but the cohesiveness of the group is what's pretty wild. And watching Karl Anthony Towns, you know, Towns from the beginning, all of a sudden, like having a force and an intensity that wasn't there before. That's the part I love about trying to cover the game and reflect these stories, because that's the human stuff. Like, you can't tell me that they're not relieved that Jimmy's gone. You just can't. And it doesn't mean they hate Jimmy as a person. You know what I mean? Like, probably varying degrees. There's guys in there that love him, guys in there that were sick of him. But the mood means that, you know, they're willing to defend. And that's it. Like, that's, I think, the crankiness of every team in the NBA shows up on the defensive end first.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're seeing
that's a great way
in
to
Minnesota.
Put it. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. That the frustrations that you start to see, they don't really show up when somebody has the ball, right? Like somebody has the ball isolated on the wing. They aren't going to sit there and not put forth the effort to get to the basket. It's going to be right. when they're on the other end of that, when they're guarding the guy who has the ball, and they say, well, you know what? I guess Carl can handle it back there if he gets by me, you know, whatever. And then you head down the other way. So that's a really good way to put it. I also think Robert Covington is very much a Tom Thibodeau type player, isn't he? Like, that just seems like a seamless fit.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and that's where, I mean, that's another subplot to this whole thing, is it's like Tibbs in trouble. You know, Tom's at odds with Glenn Taylor, the T-Wolves owner, and there's this great divide between them. And I'm not saying that Tom's now going to get an extension anytime soon, but, you know, the results have been good. And I think it's funny because right in the wake of the trade, you know, John Krasinski, who does a great job in Minnesota for us,
absolutely,
had an interview with Glenn Taylor. And it was pointed out by a lot of readers and media folks that Glenn would not call Thibodeau by his name. He would call him the coach, you know, and it just seems so icy.
Yeah.
But now it's like, well, I bet he's fine calling him the coach, because if the coach is getting team to play, then the coach can remain the coach. And, you know, yeah, Covington fits in with what they're doing. And I would argue that if there's like a universal takeaway with the Jimmy Butler, Tom Thibodeau experience, it's just that you've always got to pay close attention to personal dynamics. And just because like Tom and Jimmy were in lockstep to an unhealthy degree. And I think it tipped the scales of power internally to where I think it had a negative impact on other players on the team. And it was like something I'd never seen before. And I like Tom a lot. I've enjoyed covering him, and he's always been professional and gracious with me. And honestly, the same with Jimmy. But when you would talk to Tom about Jimmy, I used to joke that, like, you know, Jimmy's agent is Bernie Lee. And I'd talk to Tom, and I kind of wanted to do a double take and think I was talking to Bernie. Because, like, Tom, you might ask him about Andrew Wiggins, and he'll be like, wow, Jimmy had a great game tonight. You know, like, why do you always go back to Jimmy? And always, it's just, he was obsessed with Jimmy. And I think it had, you know, a ripple effect on the culture with the other guys.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. I want to now kind of open up and broaden the scope here across the rest of the NBA. And it's been already a busy season already. When you get a star moved like Jimmy Butler, it's going to send ripple effects throughout the league. And then now you have Kyle Korver go to Utah, and that seems like a pretty good fit so far. And like I said earlier, this is when the league really starts picking up, as we start getting into the Christmas season and then beyond that. And when guys who were signed this past offseason can finally be moved on December 15th, it seems like we might be heading towards a busy trading period. What are you hearing, or how what kind of vibe are you getting in that respect?
You know, we shall see. It is kind of early. You know, I kind of mentioned in passing the Beal situation earlier, and mm-hmm. you know, that's the one that I think, in terms of, you know, the needle mover across the league, you know, the combination of his contract and how good he is, that's the one that has got a lot of executives excited, just kind of trying to figure out what they might be able to pull off. The, you know, John Wall is a whole different story when you start factoring in his contract, you know, and a lot of action coming out of Washington with folks wondering if they're going to blow it up. And I know they've been open to conversations, but now they're playing a little bit better recently. Yep. You know, and then you've got the Otto Porter watch as well. You know, I'm based south of Sacramento, and the Kings, you know, I keep plugging guys at our place, so shameless promotion alert. But Jason Jones at The Athletic had reported that the Kings are monitoring the Otto Porter situation. If you remember, they pursued him as a restricted free agent. And so that's a guy they would love to get in-house. So it's kind of 6 degrees of the Wizards and kind of going out from there. I mean, you know, you've got your at the height of the Warriors dysfunction discussion, you know, you had your kind of like your what ifs that had, you know, what if on steroids, which is there any chance the Warriors would take a call about Durant? You know, the Draymond kind of act his way out
that
of their environment, but yeah, but I mean, those are more than just purely speculative. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we shall see. I think I have to assume that the parity across the league is going to likely lead to a more active deadline than we might have otherwise thought, because, you know, it really does feel like, I mean, on the one hand, you still have most people in the league saying the Warriors are going to figure it out. The talent is going to win out again. But it just doesn't have that feel of hopelessness that it did even 3 months ago from the rest of the league. I think teams feel like, you know, if you were able to, you know, pull off the kind of move that takes you to the next level roster wise, then who knows what you might be able to accomplish.
Yeah, it's kind of funny the way you mention how everything is kind of relative to where the Warriors at right now, right? Like if they had things under control and they were cruising atop the Western Conference, then yeah, I could see teams kind of, well, we'll see how things turn out for us this year, but we don't want to overextend ourselves if we don't necessarily have to, or if we don't necessarily have that same chance. But right. there are some arguments to be made across the league. If Beal goes to the right team, that the Warriors don't feel as invincible as they usually do. I mean, for the Lakers specifically, I don't know how much they, and you would know better than me, but I don't know how much they would value Bradley Beal versus the opportunity to maybe sign and take advantage of the Warriors' situation in this upcoming offseason. The contracts there don't quite match up if they do acquire Bradley Beal. That takes him out of the running kind of for Kevin Durant. But again, if the Lakers keep playing well, and if they keep on, if momentum carries them the right direction and the momentum keeps kind of stagnant around the Warriors, I could see either the Lakers or any other team out there to really kind of step up and say, you know, if we're that one piece away, this could get interesting really quickly. How interesting that might be, who knows? But we're going to keep building on this point here in a second. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And it's you know, this is why podcasts can be fun, because they make the wheels turn, and you got, like, you got me officially thinking here, you know, and this is all fresh, like the Melo stuff just happened.
Yeah.
But I really do like the Lakers thing is interesting. And again, I don't have anybody telling me that they're willing to give up any of their young core guys. Mm-hmm. And you got to assume that, you know, Washington would push for some of those guys. But it would more be, from the Lakers' point of view, the idea of taking on bad money and going that route. But my goodness, I think the motivation and the incentive for the Lakers would have a couple layers to it. You know, everybody continues to expect that Klay Thompson is not going to go anywhere this summer, that he's going to re-sign with the Warriors. That's the kind of shooter that they would love to have. And Bradley Beal could certainly play that role. Kevin Durant, we all know, was in the headlines today telling Bleacher Report kind of his two cents on the notion of playing with LeBron. And, you know, I think his comments did get taken out of context a lot, but he also used the word toxic, which is like, that was a bad choice by him. That's a very, very strong, powerful word. So it's like, if you have a few negative signs about Durant coming your way, maybe it's already time. I mean, we forget sometimes how good these teams are at getting the early intel. And, you know, I'm not saying I know what's happening, but this is also the franchise that has already been, you know, nailed for tampering twice, you know.
So for like, winking.
Yes. No. So like I'm pretty confident saying they've got a good read of the room right now about who may or may not be coming their way. And so if they could, you know, if they have a degree of pessimism on that front as they head into the summer, then maybe they end up getting more aggressive and ambitious before the deadline, you know, because they know the summer would be tough otherwise.
That's now my wheels are spinning. Oh boy.
Yeah. I mean, bottom line, I think Magic and Rob might ramp it up here, and that'll be, I mean, they've got chips to play with. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
those young guys are great, but if you got LeBron James and you got you know, you go from 2-7 to 15-9 and you got a good thing going here. You know, you can't, it's just kind of, do you strike when the iron is hot? You know, I'm a guarantee you they're chewing on it.
It's a fascinating conversation. It really is. It's opportunity cost. It's fit with the team. It's mentalities. It's interesting. I want to finish here. Usually, we talked a ton about trades and all of that and potential trades on this very show. I traded a future first rounder and a bad contract out in Adam, to bring you on for this Friday episode. he's a Nuggets guy. That's been a really fun team to watch, and I think they highlight specifically the stuff that you and I were talking about when it comes to teams out there kind of looking at the Warriors and then looking at the stuff that they have going and saying, hey, we can feel pretty good about it ourselves. Do you think it continues with the Nuggets? Do you think the 7-game winning streak is the real deal, or do you think it's, well, the right things falling at the right time?
I'm mostly believing. You know, I spent some time with them in the training camp. They were in San Diego. You know, and I have a very good feel for Mike Malone in terms of what he's made of in his fabric and kind of what he's tried to accomplish out there. And, you know, we talk about synergy and kind of we analyze the Lakers and the Kings and teams like that. You know, no situation is perfect, but Denver has a fantastic environment with their front office and their coach. And the roster, like, the what's cool about the roster and like my understanding of the relationship stuff is, like, have there been times in the last couple of years when guys in that locker room, now granted some of them are gone, like the Wilson Chandlers of the world, but like got tired of hearing, because Mike Malone can be a very tough coach.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, were there times when there were questions about whether or not he was going to have the shelf life out there? Yes, there were. But there were also a lot of times when Mike spent significant portions of his summer traveling the entire globe to go see his players and to go on vacations with them at different times. And like getting a depth to his connection with them that I think has served all of them well going forward. And they just seem to have a great environment. Tim Conley, you know, is a very positive, uplifting guy. You know, they gave Mike that extension earlier in the year. You know, I think Tim's on the last year of his deal. So, I mean, I think he deserves to be rewarded as well. You know, shout out Stan Kroenke. But they, you know, they got a good thing going on. And Jokic has the Vlade Divac, but even better, as kind of the guy that you run your offense through. And, you know, and having snipers on the wings with, you know, Jamal and Gary and Isaiah Thomas coming back sooner rather than later, and Will Barton down the line as well. The depth is going to be big. So I definitely, I'm buying what they're doing. I'm still surprised by the defense. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe it's sustainable, but it's, you know, I actually would wonder historically if, I mean, that so far anyway, it's got to be up there with some of the greatest defensive turnarounds that we've seen from one year to the next.
Yeah, it's certainly fascinating. They rely a lot on 3-point defending ability, and that tends to be kind of random. So we'll see if right. That's where the regression starts. Well, this was a lot of fun, Sam. I greatly appreciate you hopping on here and taking time out of what eventually became a really busy night, I'm sure, for you. So I'm going to let you go here, and I look forward to hopefully talking to you again sometime soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Anthony.
All right. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.